This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Imagine this scenario. You're a hard worker who's been with an employer for a long time, but year after year, you never get promoted. Eventually, for other reasons, you decide to change your life, part of which includes losing a lot of weight. And a few months later, you suddenly get that promotion, which feels great, but it also makes you wonder, was I passed over all those years because of my weight?
It's not an unusual situation. In fact, complaints of bias against overweight and obese workers are increasing. For years, the Massachusetts state legislature has considered a bill that would include weight in the state's anti-discrimination laws. But for more than a decade, the bill went nowhere.
That is, until last month, when the bill sailed right out of committee. It could come up for a full vote in the House on Beacon Hill later this year. The sudden turnaround is spurred by many things, not the least of which is the fact that two-thirds of Americans are considered overweight.
Science is changing the view on obesity. American society, perhaps not so much. What role should the law play here? Obesity is the next chapter in the evolution of anti-discrimination laws, and it's especially controversial and complicated because much of the debate comes down to the question of choice. Can you choose to lose weight and keep it off? Or do deeper biochemical factors determine your weight?
If there's even a whiff of choice here, and that's a big if, should the law protect those employees who are overweight? We're going to explore these questions now with WBUR's own Carrie Goldberg. She's the co-host of our Common Health blog, and she wrote about this for the blog. You can find a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Hi there, Carrie.
Hey, Meghna.
So first of all, let's talk about the specifics of the bill here, and let's get the terminology out of the way. When we say overweight or obese, what exactly do we mean in the terms of the proposed Massachusetts law?
Right. So the bill says that you may not discriminate on the basis of height or weight. So that would actually include tall people, short people, thin people, and fat people. But of course, it is the obese and overweight people that's kind of the hot area of debate.
Okay, so nothing about your physical being can be used for discrimination.
Right, your appearance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, for 15 years, this bill has been in committee on Beacon Hill, never moved out of it until just last week. What's changed?
That's right. It was a dog for a long time, but I spoke with its very long-lasting sponsor, Byron Rushing, a Democrat, and he told me that what he thinks is the real difference is the research, and it's kind of two areas of research. One is research that documents that the bias actually exists, that a lot of people who are overweight or obese report experiencing bias from their bosses and, in fact, earning less than their normal weight counterparts. And then the other aspect is this whole shift, a paradigm shift in the understanding of obesity, thinking of it more as a chronic and complex disease rather than just a sort of a character flaw, why don't you just eat less and exercise more? So it's two areas of research that I think are propelling the bill forward more than it ever was before. Mm.
Now, are there any other cities or states that have similar laws on the books?
Yeah. So interestingly, Michigan is the only state to ever have passed one of these laws, and it was 25 years ago. No other state has passed one since. However, a bunch of cities have started doing it, and kind of the cities you might expect, like San Francisco, Madison, Wisconsin, areas that we think of as more liberal.
Interesting. I'm seeing Urbana, Illinois as well, and as of yet, they actually haven't had a single person bring a case based on their anti-discrimination law.
Right. And Michigan found the same thing, that it did not bring this big barrage of new lawsuits.
Okay. Now, what about the already encoded into the law of the United States, the Americans with Disabilities Act? Does that not cover discrimination, especially now since the American Medical Association views obesity in particular as a disease?
Right. That's a complex question. And all I really understand is that the Americans with Disabilities Act has not created a strong defense for people with obesity. So it's been kind of hit or miss and dependent on whether, in fact, it's truly seen as a disability.
Okay. So, Carrie, stand by for a second, because I want to bring in a couple other people into this conversation here. But listeners, I also want to ask you, do you think that Massachusetts should add weight, specifically people who are overweight and obese, as a protected class in the state's non-discrimination laws? If you're a person, an employee who feels like you've been discriminated against because of your weight, what was that like? What happened? And if you're an employer, if you are someone who runs a workplace or who owns an organization, what does this prospect mean to you? Do you think it might help you do business better or maybe get in the way of your ability to run your workplace to the best of your ability. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Once again, I'm joined by Carrie Goldberg. She's co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Joining us now is Rebecca Poole. She's deputy director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, it's great to have you. Let me first ask you a question that sort of keys off something that Carrie said a little bit earlier about how science is viewing the causes behind people being overweight or obese, especially now since, as we were saying earlier, two-thirds of the country are considered to be overweight. Where does the science stand on all of this?
Well, traditionally, this issue of obesity has really been approached as an issue of personal responsibility. And when we blame and focus the issue on personal choice or willpower, that really gives way to tremendous widespread stigma and shame. What we know, though, is that this is a very complex condition, that there are many different factors at play. Personal choice is one of many factors. It's only one piece of a much more complex puzzle involving genetics, biology, our environment, and lots of other factors. And I think that this recognition is increasing in the public. We're starting to realize that this is not as simple as it's made out to be.
Okay. So let me just get right to that choice issue. We're going to come back to it again and again. It's been at the heart of many hours of conversation here in the Radio Boston office. What's your take on that? If choice is even the most minor part of this complicated picture that you just presented, does that not leave the door open for people to say it shouldn't, the anti-discrimination laws protecting people based on the basis of weight don't really have a place in the workplace?
Well, I'm not really sure that cause makes a difference here. I mean, I think that when we look at bias and discrimination, people deserve equal treatment and deserve to be respected regardless of their body size, whatever the reason is for their body size. So I think we need to really question why that is so important.
Okay. I'm also joined now, Rebecca Poole, stand by. I'm also joined now by Jay Barrows. He represents the 1st Bristol District in the Massachusetts State House. Mr. Barrows, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Now, do you support or not support this proposed legislation that would put weight as a basis of non-discrimination?
I think what we already have on the books now is more than sufficient to protect people from being discriminated against. I'm also an employer. I have 12 employees, and I get all different shapes and sizes and religious backgrounds and male, female, it doesn't matter, can they do the job? And a lot of this is just, I think, somewhat overdoing it and making that much more difficult for employers to try to go out and hire the best people that are going to help their businesses and help those folks and their families. Mm.
Now, Carrie Goldberg's piece on this on WBUR's Common Health blog, she cited the case of a woman who felt like she was doing great work, lost a lot of weight, and then all of a sudden got a promotion. And that was the reason why she wondered. The nature of her work hadn't necessarily changed. It was just her physical shape that had, and that got her a promotion. I mean, do cases like that disturb you, and do you feel like those are the kind of cases that possibly do deserve some protection?
Well, I don't know. How do you, in fact, prove that? I mean, that's very subjective, I guess. And again, that's what we're talking about, is somebody accusing someone of wrongdoing and then, I guess, taking them to court and trying to have the wrong write it. But again, how do you prove something like that? Very, very difficult, I would think.
Jay Barrow, stand by for a second, because I want to turn that question back to Rebecca Poole, because I'm wondering, Rebecca, and this is all hypothetical because we're not speaking about an actual individual before us, but if someone who does, decide, hey, I'm going to go that extra mile, I'm going to try and lose the weight that I've tried to do so for many, many years, and they actually do it, I mean, that's a profound life change, not just a physical one, but you have to change your behavior, you have to change your attitudes, you have to change the environment around you. Certainly that might have some sort of positive benefit in terms of how you perform in the workplace. So do you see what I'm getting at? That
Well, I would like to say that there actually is considerable research evidence documenting this problem, especially in workplace settings. And when we look at research over the past 10 years, there's been a 66% increase in reports of weight discrimination. This is, in fact, now more common than racial discrimination among women, particularly in employment settings, where not only do we observe inequitable hiring practices and prejudice from employers, but also lower wages, harsher disciplinary action, and wrongful job termination. And this has been proven in experimental studies where we look at hiring managers who are given identical resumes of applicants except that one is perceived to be overweight. Nothing else is different. And we see that they are not only less likely to hire them, but they assign lower starting salary recommendations and exhibit bias in a number of other ways. So, you know, there really actually is substantial research evidence to quantify this problem. We know it exists, and in fact, it's getting worse.
Jay Barrows, do you have a response to that?
I was just thinking, I know some employers that have programs during the year around, like, the Biggest Loser. Who can lose the most weight? Now, are we going to tell them they need to stop that because they could be discriminating against someone that can't? I mean, it's all about what we hear about now is responsibility, that we all need to do a better job of making healthy choices and doing those things. So the employer that promotes that, will he then be challenged for promoting a healthy lifestyle? I mean, it's not all, I guess I don't completely buy the notion that it is all not sometimes by choice. People have gastric bypass surgery, all kinds of things to improve their health. And again, I don't believe that there is that rampant discrimination out there in this form that, again, isn't covered by what we already have on the book.
Listeners, we're talking about a proposed Massachusetts bill that would add weight as a protected class in Massachusetts non- or anti-discrimination laws, essentially preventing employers from discriminating against workers based on their height, their weight, whether they're underweight or overweight or particularly obese. Now, what do you make of that? Do you think people should be protected in the workplace on the basis of their weight? Or do you think it takes the law a step too far, especially when it seems as if the science isn't 100% certain in individual cases as to what causes people to be overweight or obese? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm particularly interested in hearing from people on either side of this issue, whether or not you feel you've perhaps been discriminated against in the workplace, or if you are an employer yourself, what do you make of it? 800-423-8255. Let's take a quick call from Julie, who's calling from Worcester. You're on the air, Julie.
Hi, I just wanted to call in. Thank you for taking my call. To make it clear as though I'm sure everyone has it. Nobody wants anybody to be discriminated against. However, I do think that this is taking the law a little bit too far. If we end up saying something as subjective as weight is to be a law, then what's to say that we won't be having laws, say, against somebody's hair color or against somebody's particular way that they look or their style? It's just, I just believe that it's not something that the law needs to interfere with. If you can get a job, fine. If you can't, then you need to put up a lawsuit like other people for gender or their ethnic background, whatever. I just think it's taking it too far, and it's just kind of a waste of everyone's time to be focusing on one little thing after another. We have a lot more things to worry about.
Julie, thank you so much for your call. Carrie Goldberg, Julie seems to be getting at something which I imagine a lot of other people feel, that this is just a step too far.
Right. Well, first of all, to respond to her challenge to whether it would be hard to decide who's obese or thin, I mean, I think that would be fairly easy because there are federal guidelines about what your body mass index are supposed to be, and they designate very clearly who's overweight, who's obese, who's underweight, and so on. So I think that would be fairly easy. And then I think you can't really say it's trivial when people like Rebecca Poole have been producing this research that finds that, in fact, this bias apparently is very prevalent in the workplace. It's not a small thing. It's a lot of the country is overweight or obese, and a lot of those people do say that they're experiencing bias.
Rebecca Poole, do you want to continue with that?
You know, I think it's interesting because when we talk about any form of bias, whether it's gender or race or sexual orientation, we're also talking about perception. And yet those forms of bias have been legitimized through legal measures and many legal avenues. In terms of one of the comments that was made earlier about, you know, the next thing we know, it will be hair color or other aspects of appearance. You know, right now there actually are many state anti-bullying laws that do list those kinds of characteristics. You're not allowed to bully in many states based on different aspects of physical appearance, like hair color or attractiveness, et cetera. So why isn't body weight legitimate to include in that as well?
Mm. Jay Barrows, what's your response to that?
Well, I'm just, again, sitting here thinking, what about people that smoke cigarettes? Is that, we know that that's an addiction, right? Do we discriminate against smokers? You bet we do, right? We do in our health care. We charge them more for premium. You know, all of this stuff, again, it's these little things that just keep adding on and adding on and adding on and making it very difficult for our, you know, small businesses, big businesses to make the right hire, to advance the business, to allow somebody to advance their career by throwing another thing in the way for somebody to say, you know what, I'm going to challenge you because my body mass index is a, you know, 1.23 and I'm 1% over, and that's why you didn't give me the promotion or that's why you didn't hire me. And, you know, there's folks out there that will run those suits all day long as test cases to see what can happen. Mm. And I just think that it makes it very, very difficult in this environment to continue to try to hire the right people. And I guess I have more faith in, you know, the hiring managers, employers, and people that we've taught, you know, anti-bullying in school. We do that in the workplace. We're doing all this stuff, and to say that it's rampant, I just don't find it so. I just don't believe that. Mm.
Well, Jay Barrows is a Massachusetts state representative for the 1st Bristol District. I understand that we've got to let you go, Mr. Barrows, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Good conversation. Thanks for having me, and both everybody have a great day.
All right, Rebecca Poole, I want to turn a different aspect of this overall question to you because, for example, we know that there are many attendant health costs to being overweight or especially obese. I mean, I've read numbers that say that obese workers cost employers $73 billion a year due to increased health costs, and perhaps they miss an estimated 450 million additional days of work each year nationwide because of those health effects related to their weight. Now, given that, isn't that right in and of itself plausible grounds by which for an employer to say it's possibly not the best thing for my business, you know, financially or even productive-wise, to have a lot of employees who are heavily overweight or obese?
Well, I have two responses to that. The first is that rather than doing things like imposing financial penalties on employees who are obese or denying them protection from discrimination, a much better way to address the costs that are associated with obesity is for employers to actually support societal changes that can help change the conditions that have created obesity in the first place. Doing things like supporting increasing access and affordability of healthy foods, providing opportunities for physical activity, and creating a work environment that actually makes it easy for employees to be healthy. These are the kinds of changes that we need to make if we really wanted to reverse this. My second response is that there seems to be a common public perception, and we've heard a little bit of this in today's discussion, that maybe stigma is kind of needed to either provide incentive for people to lose weight or to motivate weight loss. But what we know from a number of years of research evidence is that, in fact, stigma makes this problem worse. When people feel stigmatized or discriminated against because of their weight, they are more likely to engage in unhealthy eating behaviors. They're more likely to avoid physical activity. They engage in more calorie consumption. And recent research actually shows that this increases the risk of obesity and remaining obese over time. So this actually contributes to obesity. Stigma makes it difficult for us to effectively address this issue.
Listeners, we're talking about a proposed Massachusetts bill that would include overweight and obese workers as a protected class when it comes to anti-discrimination laws in the state. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. There are many people out there who see weight as the next frontier when it comes to anti-discrimination protection in the United States. Do you agree or disagree with that? Again, we're at 800-423-8255. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us, so let's get a whole variety of voices in here. Sri's calling from Reading. You're on the air, Sri.
Hey, great show. I just want to ask, so now that we know that some employers are charging additional health premiums for obese people, isn't that already discrimination? And now that Obamacare is law, would that affect the way, as in this law, if it becomes law, then won't people start suing because they're being charged additional premium?
Sri, great question. Rebecca Poole, do you have a response to that?
Well, many people do feel that in charging employees with obesity higher premiums is a form of discrimination. And this has really brought into play a very important discussion about the ways that employers are approaching obesity and the need for approaches that really encourage employee wellness without stigmatizing or shaming them. It's kind of a separate, different type of discrimination that we're talking about. But I do think that this issue is increasingly important.
I'd like to take another call. Let's go to Wendy, who's calling from Sudbury. You're on the air, Wendy.
Hi. I kind of have views on both points, that there needs to be some protection, but yes, it can go overboard. Mainly, I'll try to briefly tell you my story. I'm 60 years old. I'm a disabled vet. In my early 30s, I was diagnosed with a connective tissue disease known as endometriosis. And to control it, I was put on every hormone in the book, multiple birth control pills, multiple testosterone, including anabolic steroid. By the time I was in graduate school in my mid-30s, I weighed 150, didn't do anything to gain the weight, was biking and working out because I was still a reservist. Ultimately, in 96, my weight gain was what caused them to have a medical board, mm-hmm. but because I have a chronic disease that there's no cure for, they boarded me out on that, but they gave me a pass on the weight gain. And then a couple years later, I was also diagnosed with a thyroid condition.
Wow,
I've actually seen in person and had it happen to me. If you look at the character in the Santa Claus with Tim Allen and you know how he complains about gaining 40 pounds in 1 week, that really happens to people.
Well, Wendy, can I ask you a question? Because sure. your story is a perfect one, because there's a clear-cut sort of series of events, as you're describing, that led to the major changes in your body. Now, I don't think that there's any court in the United States that would not consider that worthy of protection, right? Because there's a medical reason. What's
right.
your take for people, whom their weight gain maybe isn't so clear cut, and we can't really point to one metabolic or medical reason as to why
right.
they're overweight.
I do have feelings on that because I'm also unemployed and on food stamps. And they've actually cut my benefits here in Massachusetts from what I had in Florida. I came back home 3 years ago. And, oh, by the way, I've lost 70 pounds since last December because I had a bowel obstruction, and now my body can't process protein. And I'm down to a weight I really like, and I hope I never gain it back. But, they finally got my thyroid balanced after 15 years of dealing with it. And you just can't buy a lot of healthy food. So I understand how sometimes families will make choices for food that is not as healthy, for the packaged items because they're cheaper, for the ramen noodles, because they can afford them. $179 doesn't go very far.
Well, Wendy, thank you so much for your call and for your perspective, because that's sort of the other side of the choice question, which we haven't been able to get to yet. And Wendy, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us. Let's go to Kelly, who's calling from Wilbury. You're on the air, Kelly.
Hi. I guess it's more of an opinion, and kind of like Wendy's, I can see both sides of it. I understand the protections that we have in place for, static characteristics, so age, gender, sex orientation at this point now. But where weight is kind of a dynamic, and yes, a lot of factors are taken into consideration when you're considering why a person has weight gain. When I was talking to the program director, I was discussing the fact that if we're going to protect something like weight, then the two women up for a job, both 130 pounds, but one's facial features are not attractive, and one of the tasks for this person's job is to have a lot of interaction and public speaking.
Kelly, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to take it from you there because your phone line was really, really, really choppy. So I'm going to just repeat what you said back to Rebecca Poole, who's the deputy director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University. Kelly was saying that what if an employer, has two identical candidates come to the table, one is overweight, or maybe they just have different facial features. teachers as well, but the yet they have to meet clients a lot. Are employers going to be met with negative consequences if they pick people they think are more suited for the job?
You know, one of the areas that we do see weight discrimination occurring quite frequently in the workplace is for these kinds of face-to-face interactions with customers, so things like sales jobs. And we see that women tend to be more vulnerable to this than men. That for women, you know, we have very stringent ideals of female physical attractiveness and thinness. And when women deviate from that ideal or that norm, they are more vulnerable to stigma and discrimination. And we see that for women at much lower levels of overweight, so at a body mass index of something like 27, for example, they become more vulnerable to weight bias than for men who don't experience this until higher levels of overweight and obesity.
Right. I see a statistic here that says for women who are categorized as obese, for instance, that they earn on average 24% less than those women who are not.
That's right. They earn significantly less for exactly the same work performed and after a whole range of different family and socioeconomic factors are accounted for. You know, the thing that I wanted to mention as well in terms of thinking about these laws is that we actually have published a number of national studies looking at support among Americans regarding the extent that they would support different laws to address discrimination. And what we found is considerable support for this, especially for laws that would address weight discrimination in the workplace. This was supported by 81% of women and 65% of men. And these are national studies.
Well, let me ask you a question. And I asked this of Carrie a little bit before, so forgive me for the repetition, but I want to tease apart the answer to the degree of detail, which I hope we can get to. Because as Carrie has told us, the American Medical Association has recognized obesity as a disease. And my confusion was, in that case, isn't it already covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act? Because the ADA prevents discrimination based on any sort of anyone who's actually disabled or even regarded as being disabled. So wouldn't weight
fall
under that?
Well, disability and disease are two different things.
Okay.
And I think that's an important distinction. Okay. With the American with Disabilities Act, this really has not been a viable solution because in many cases it only applies to individuals with severe obesity. And you're right that the onus is on the individual to somehow prove that their obesity is either disabling or was perceived to be disabling. You know, if we consider that obesity officially starts at a body mass index of 30, many, if not most people with obesity are not disabled at all and yet may still be experiencing discrimination. There's also an onus on the individual to prove that there is some kind of physiological cause for their obesity, which is incredibly difficult to do. So this is really not a viable solution for many people.
Let's take a couple more calls. Jack's calling from Hingham. You're on the air, Jack.
Hi. I was just wondering, we have a protected class. You know, if we keep on adding, names to the list, aren't we diluting the brand? I mean, there are people who are discriminated for so many other less approachable reasons, and I mean approachable in that, you know, folks can address their issues despite their weight issues, despite their, and I'm having a hard time.
No, I think I get what you mean. You basically sounds like you're saying that the protected class is getting too broad here. Jack, thank you so much for your call. Let's dovetail that with Joe, who's calling from the south end of Boston. You're on the air, Joe.
Oh, thank you. The comment I wanted to make, or maybe it's a question, is that it sounds like weight or people who are overweight or obese, it's an irreversible condition. But one thing you were mentioning earlier is that an individual had lost weight and they were able to achieve the promotions or the goals that they had in the organization. So if they're able to lose weight, how is that a disease that they can't overcome?
Joe, thank you so much for your call. Let's turn that to Carrie Goldberg.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Meghna and I have been debating this question for several days. And
Civilly debating it.
And ultimately, it does seem to always revolve around that question of, well, but isn't it a choice? We know that people do lose weight, so can't anyone lose weight if they really try? And I feel like one of the things that I learned from speaking with an obesity specialist at Mass General Hospital, Dr. Scott Butch, is that he says that what we understand these days is that there's not one obesity. It's sort of like there are many obesities. And it could be that there are some people, actually, he said, take two patients, tell them to stop drinking soda. They'll come back in 3 months. One will have lost 40 pounds. The other one won't have lost a pound, even though, in fact, they were both doing the same behaviors. So I think that's part of what makes this such a difficult question, which is that obesity itself is complex. And we can't always assume, just because we see so many Biggest Loser shows, that in fact anyone who chooses to lose weight is going to be able to get down to a near normal weight.
I think this is a very salient point. And Rebecca Poole, I want to put it back to you, because given exactly what Carrie said, and you know the many obesities question, it does make me wonder if now is not the best time for the law to step in, because the law paints with a very broad brush. It creates an entire protected class that doesn't necessarily take into account the subtleties of the many different causes, the many different obesities.
You know, I guess I'm just not sure why that is critical to determining whether we need laws in place when we have so much evidence that two-thirds of the population are being stigmatized and discriminated against. You know, in terms of causes of obesity, there are many causes of obesity, and the fact that we're calling this a disease really doesn't necessarily speak to the different causes. You know, there are many other forms of disease, such as cancer, that are preventable, that have preventable behavioral factors that are involved as well. And that doesn't negate the legitimacy of that either. So,
but Rebecca, can I just jump in here for a second? Because you said two-thirds of the population are being discriminated against. Was that two-thirds of the population are overweight? But that doesn't necessarily mean every single individual in that two-thirds is being discriminated against.
No, two-thirds are overweight or obese, and those two-thirds are very vulnerable to weight bias and discrimination. And it's not just in employment. It's in healthcare. It's in educational institutions. It's in media. With children and weight-based bullying, this starts early. And weight-based bullying is now the most common reason that children are bullied in the school setting. So, you know, if we think about discrimination, this really is an issue of bullying. And I think we need to think about that more broadly.
Well, Rebecca Poole is Deputy Director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University. Rebecca, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, thank you, as always, for bringing a very potent and fascinating issue to our table here at Radio Boston.
We'll keep debating it, Meghna.
Civilly, as always. And listeners, keep this conversation going online at radioboston.org. And when you go there, you can find a link to Carrie's original article about the bill that is pending in the Massachusetts legislature about anti-discrimination laws and weight. Stay with us, because there's more of the show in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.